Amateur Presentation.
Welcome back to another Untitled Wrestling Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Matt Rohrbeck. Alongside, he's allergic to tomatoes, but he is tomato meter approved, Eric Marchin.
I can't sanction this podcast, Matt. I can't sanction it.
Can't do it. Two best friends. They're best friends. They're best friends. Today this is going to be fun. We're going to talk about WWE on Netflix. Something I've wanted to talk about for a while. A huge thing happened earlier this year where WWE moved Raw from the USA Network in the US. Or actually, was it on USA? Yeah, it was on USA, and SmackDown was on Fox. A long-standing relationship with Universal and having wrestling on linear cable television. But they made this giant deal with Netflix where Raw on Monday nights was going to be live on Netflix each week, as well as internationally, like here in Canada, basically everything WWE would be on Netflix with Raw, SmackDown, NXT, all the PLEs. If you guys have been listening to us for a long time throughout the years on various shows that we've done, I think I've made wrestling jokes or we've talked about The Rock and John Cena, which will be very topical for this episode, and their Hollywood careers. But then I've also talked about how I have been a lifelong wrestling fan. So I have, you know, that has faded at certain times in my life. I think like anything that you loved as a kid, you kind of grow out of it for a little while or think you're too cool for it, or maybe there's ebbs and flows in the quality of something so you just don't watch it as much. But professional wrestling has been a constant in my life since I was very, very young. The Attitude Era, basically with Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock, Triple H, all those guys. And even when I faded out of it during that, you know, again, going to be very topical, John Cena, CM Punk kind of era of things, I always kept up with it by reading about it. Like I wouldn't go a year without watching WrestleMania or Royal Rumble, even if I didn't watch it week to week. So it's been something, you know, seminal in my life. That and video games were almost like my two loves, even before movies. So they've always had I've had a soft spot for them and always have tried to include wrestling or video games in everything that I've done. Like I'm obsessed with movies. I love movies. It's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be involved in them in some way, whether it was from criticism and now working in post-production and all this kind of stuff in movies and television. But throughout everything, video games and wrestling has always been something I've tried to insert when I can or always tried to talk about. And I think with WWE going to Netflix, it was such this perfect maybe match for both it when you're seeing the popularity of wrestling right now. And I think it's the greatest thing to happen to it in a long time. And again, I'm not trying to blow up smoke up anyone's ass, and I'll be very transparent in, you know, what we access we've been given and all that kind of stuff when we talk about our weekend. But also for me, with we've covered streaming services, the streaming wars, movies, and you know, we've covered entertainment for so long, where wrestling has always felt like this niche thing over here. And yes, it's very popular. Millions and millions of people watch wrestling even before it went to Netflix. But it was always kind of this weird, like, oh, it's just fake stuff. Or it's very silly soap opera kind of bullshit. Or you're kind of a dork if you watch it, or it's lame, some people would think. And I've had that a lot with liking comic books and all this kind of shit. So I'm used to that. But because we've covered so much stuff on Netflix and things, it just felt like the perfect time to kind of talk about it a little bit more, and its popularity getting bigger. And I felt like it was a great opportunity with this partnership with Netflix. It made a lot more sense for two guys who do a show called the Untitled Movie Podcast to talk about professional wrestling, right? Like, and you know, the title of our show, it's always been Untitled. It has movie in the title, but we talk about streaming shows. We talk about sometimes fast food. Sometimes we talk, maybe not as much anymore going off topic like that, but I don't know. Wrestling has always been special to me. And in these last couple months, you know, I've been working on things outside of this and, you know, on the video game side of things, I've tried to get more, even my work with Kind of Funny and stuff like that. Like they're a big Kind of Funny Games are video game focused, but they do film content. And I go over there and hang out with those guys and I become friends with them and do film stuff over there. And then with the wrestling stuff, it's just something that I've always wanted to talk about more, but now just makes more sense. And I think it's a long kind of meandering intro to what we're going to talk about today, because I want to talk about maybe the last couple months of WWE on Netflix, specifically about our last weekend where myself, Eric, Eric's brother, Kyle, and my friend, Ryan Hancock, all got to go to the WWE Elimination Chamber PLE here in Toronto at the Rogers Center. We got to sit 10
on
rows
John from Cena's there. Face.
Yo, we did. I'm sitting on John Cena's face currently, which is a nod to us getting a collectible chair as we left, but we'll go through everything. We'll talk about, I had a wrestling filled weekend. I went to SmackDown with Ryan the night before. We had the big event at the Rogers Center. And to show how, you know, how much, again, I've said it, it's come in waves of my love for wrestling, but I had not missed a PLE, a premium live event that took place in Toronto. I've gone to every single one live since I went to WrestleMania X8 in 2002 or three. I've went to every single one. And last year, I missed Money in the Bank, where Ryan and your brother Kyle went to it. And I was supposed to go with them. But I missed it because I had a wedding to go to, and I'm not, you know, it's a wedding. I had, it's a friend, and I would not miss their wedding for a wrestling event. That's for sure. But I was really bummed that I missed that. So this past weekend felt really special being able to do it with you guys, like bringing you, Eric, who had never been to a wrestling event before, but we've covered so many movies and other Netflix events and things like that, going with your brother and Ryan, who I've become super close with over the last, you know, since I've known you, but Ryan was a friend of my sister's and Kyle was your brother. And then I became really friends with them because another side of my personality is, yes, wrestling, but sports as well. Right. And sports entertainment. So there's this movie side and the sports side. And then your brother shares a lot of those similarities with loving movies and sports as well. And finding that kind of middle ground between the two. So it was really special to kind of go with them as well and kind of have this amazing night and, you know, probably one of the greatest experiences or events I'll ever go to in my life. So yeah, WrestleMania X8 was in 2002 and I hadn't missed one. So that's over 20 years of not missing a wrestling event, at least a pay-per-view premium live event in Toronto. So being able to, I missed that last one being so disappointed and then going to this one this past weekend. And it was a whole lead up of, I went to the premiere of Raw on Netflix in LA. And again, before we get into all of this stuff, I will say a couple things. Thank you to Netflix Canada. Like, this is a weird spot sometimes when Eric and I, sometimes for Critics' Choice or whatever, you go to these events and you're both press, but sometimes they're influencer events. And I'm like, am I a film critic? Am I a podcaster? All these kind of things. And so take all of this with a grain of salt. Yes, we got access to Elimination Chamber and Raw in LA that not very many people did. And I'm very grateful to that. And I'm very thankful to the Netflix teams. Eric and I will always give you our unbiased, honest opinion on something, no matter what we're given for free or things like that. But you take all of this with a grain of salt. You could not believe me. You could go, well, of course they're saying all this stuff because they were given free tickets and all this kind of other stuff. And I will always tell you, I probably would have had an amazing time if we all bought tickets and sat up in the 500s together, right? Did I have a better time because it was free and we sat 10 rows from the ring? Of course I did. So I just want to be transparent with people that, you know, yes, Netflix provided us with the tickets. They gave us an amazing hospitality experience that, yes, will inflate maybe how amazing this night was for us. So I always want to be transparent with that for people who are listening. But I wanted to give you all that preamble to show that I really give a shit about this and that it's something that I really do care about. And I would tell you my honest opinion of the show or what I felt about WWE on Netflix. you know, and that other stuff is amazing. And I'm very grateful to the Netflix team. We have a great relationship with them. But I think why we have a great relationship is because Eric and I are always kind of straight shooters. We're respectful, but we'll always kind of be honest about how we feel about stuff. So I just wanted to kind of get that out of the way too. So Eric, I've gone on long, but I know this will probably be a lot of me talking, but I'm very curious to hear your side of everything as well. So I don't know where you want to start. Like the Raw in LA stuff, I think I can just quickly go over that. So yeah, Netflix flew me out. I went to LA. It was an interesting trip because I'm so used to going with you to things. And it was a very small crew of Canadian people that were there to check out the event. But no one kind of puts on an event like Netflix. From all these things that we've kind of gone to over the years, like they always do a really great job with the production of everything and the whole red carpet and seeing everyone kind of come out for Raw on Netflix. And they treated it like a big deal. And that's one thing that I'm kind of impressed with over these last couple months is like, you know, even that Netflix preview event we went to, which was covering everything from, you know, a Ben Affleck movie to a small Canadian TV show that they're premiering. They kicked
the
it off.
The Martin series.
Yeah, they kicked it off with CM Punk and Rhea Ripley talking. And it's like, it's so weird to me because most of the press in that room would they would not know who they are, don't really watch wrestling, but like Netflix is treating it like a big deal. So when I went down to LA for Raw, you could tell that they were treating it like it was an important piece of their programming, which is cool to see when wrestling has always kind of been this, you know, it's again, like I said, it's always been popular, but it hasn't been this mainstream since maybe, you know, maybe the early John Cena days, or maybe even the Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock days in that Attitude Era, right? Like it's getting to that point where it's the popularity is there. And I think the access people have and the availability on the Netflix stuff and then treating it just as important as Squid Game or Stranger Things or whatever else that they're doing. Right. So yeah, that event was an interesting event where I will be honest where it wasn't the best episode of Raw. Like it was a very season premiere corporate kind of, we have to appeal to everyone kind of event where, yeah, the main event between CM Punk and Seth Rollins was amazing. There was some great matches and great segments. I mean, this will lead into a lot of the Elimination Chamber stuff, but The Rock coming out during that show, I've had some issues with the portrayal of his character over the last little while, because there's both The Rock and there's Dwayne Johnson, right? And then sometimes The Rock, you know, in a wrestling term, breaks kayfabe, which is breaks character essentially, or breaks the reality of the shared experience we're having of believing that these people are real people, but they're all playing characters, right? We all know that. But The Rock kind of flip-flops in between those, between corporate, good job, Ted Sarandos kind of thing, like, and then also going to be the final boss, this villain that he's played with Cody Rhodes over the last little while. So during that episode, that was one of the most confusing segments of The Rock coming out and both like, you were just whipping this guy a couple months ago at WrestleMania, and now you're saying he's your friend and you're saying thanks to Netflix and all this kind of stuff. So it was weird flip-flopping where it was kind of a show that felt like it was still trying to find its footing for what, you know, WWE on Netflix is going to be. So, but overall an amazing event, had a blast. It was interesting being in a different part of LA that I don't usually go to, cause it was at the new LA Clippers arena, which is a little bit, we're usually in like the, you know, Hollywood or Beverly Hills, area. And this is kind of in the, I'm blanking on the arena name, the Intuit Dome, which is like in Inglewood, California. And we're kind of like south of the airport and stuff like that. So it's just kind of cool being in a different area and seeing, we see so much of the movie side of things. So seeing them, this foray into sports, like I went to the Jake Paul, Mike Tyson event that they had. And that was kind of the beginning of all of this, right? Where you can tell that they're doing more and more sporting events and they're trying to do more and more sports. And I think live sports are such a huge, you know, money driver and things like that too, with advertising and stuff like that. So I think it's smart. And, you know, there were some hiccups in that first episode of Raw and things like that, but they've kind of worked those out over the last couple months. And what's cool on the Canadian side of things too, right? This also all used to be through Rogers and Sportsnet, where now it's all on Netflix. So WWE Network in Canada used to be a separate charge. You used to have to pay the $15 a month just for that part on top of your Sportsnet stuff. And, you know, you didn't get everything, and it was kind of, the app wasn't great and stuff like that. So now, leading to this, of a couple months of Raw being on Netflix, but you get every PLE every month on Netflix as well. And it just makes everything so easy, and the quality has been great. And that leads us to this past Saturday. So, again, very lucky. I got to bring you, I got to bring your brother, and I got to bring Ryan. Ryan being a hardcore wrestling fan right now, your brother being a lifelong fan, and you being the one coming from kind of the outside of, like, I think you've always known about it because your brother was really interested in it when he was younger, and you've known the crossover stuff with Dave Bautista and The Rock and John Cena and wrestlers turned actors and things like that. But this
Macho
was your
man.
Yeah. Macho Man, Jesse Ventura. Yeah. Yeah. You know, all of that. And I think bringing that element in is a lot of fun. So I'll let you talk for a second. So we go to Elimination Chamber. It was an overwhelming event. But how'd you feel as a new, someone who doesn't really watch it? Like, you didn't have some of the context, but there's video packages to kind of give you some of the story, and your brother filled you in on a lot of stuff. And like, I've talked for almost 17 minutes, so I'll let you go for a sec, but
yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much a novice when it comes to the world of wrestling. Like, I know, you know, tangentially things through you and through Kyle, in terms of storylines, and even, you know, like I think it's interesting hearing you talk about outside of the podcast where wrestling is now, because it does seem like the thing that was holding it back a little bit was Vince McMahon a little
That's
bit
a big when part
it,
too yeah
when it comes to like the possibilities of making, you know, of making someone like Roman Reigns, who, you know, was being portrayed as a hero for the longest time, but it didn't seem to be working. But then as soon as he gets turned into a heel, people love him. And like, it's great because he's a great bad guy. And, you know, I think like this kind of played a role with the Elimination Chamber because of the John Cena storyline, you know, and everybody had kind of been waiting for him to make a turn to the dark side
for 20 years, dude.
Yeah. And so like with that, it's like, from my perspective, I have no idea what's going on. I'm just like, oh, the guy from the Marine is, you know, up there doing his thing. I mean, I'm joking. Like, obviously he's very good in Peacemaker, but yeah, like my perspective on all of this is that I'm coming from the crossover section of like, okay, we've seen even obviously he's a huge piece of shit, but you know, Hulk Hogan, like, people from the wrestling world moving over, and then even more recently with something like the Iron Claw, I think maybe that also brought some people in to look at the legacy, or like to think about like how long wrestling has been going on and becoming this empire, this enterprise. But with the storylines, they're, you know, I don't have like the, you know, I felt almost like a bandwagoner in a weird way, where it's like this big event, this big sort of moment happens at the end of the show. And like the way that you and Kyle and Ryan reacted to John Cena's change, it's like, this was like huge.
It was huge. You know? It
historical, it was, even.
It really was, dude. So yeah, I mean, we were 10 rows from ringside, and I'll say the whole experience, like being on the floor at the Rogers Center itself, like I worked there at one point. So I'd been on the field when I worked for the Blue Jays and stuff like that, but being there in this massive structure and thinking about when I was there for WrestleMania 18 as a 13-year-old and sitting up in the 200s. And it was just this like overwhelming experience. So even me, who knows all the storylines and things like that, it was just like overwhelming. Like, I remember when we all got there, we were like, holy crap, like this is like being able to sit 10 rows from the ring. And I know to some people that's normal and they've spent the money, and I've been a hardcore wrestling fan, but I've never, you know, invested the money in that kind of way to be able to sit, or have the money really. Like I have disposable income, sure, throughout my life, but I chose to spend it in different ways, or I would always buy the seats that were a little further back or in the 100 levels if I'm really treating myself. But being there and being there for that historical moment, we can jump to the end of the show because I think that's the biggest thing of it all. So you have John Cena, who has been away for a long time. He's doing the same thing that The Rock did and Dave Bautista and other guys who have left wrestling and become a Hollywood superstar, essentially an actor. And him coming back at this time and saying, I'm doing a year-long retirement tour where I'm going to work almost like a full-timer. I'm going to come back and do one last run, but by the end of this year, I'm done. And that's going to be it. And then what you think the storyline is going to be is he's chasing his 17th world championship to break the record for the most world championships in history, right? So you assume the whole year he'll be chasing that. And, you know, he's been a hero for so long. Like, there was a short part of his career at the very beginning where he was sort of a heel, but like, he's been John Cena, the superhero for so long that you just were like, it's never going to happen. There were times where it could have happened, but it was always like, no, I am the face of this company. I am the hero. I'm the guy who does all the Make-A-Wish things with the sick kids. I'm the guy who sells all the merch. I'm this guy. He is the hero of heroes. So to have him lose the Royal Rumble to Jey Uso, and Jey Uso is a big, massive star right now, cousin to Roman Reigns and stuff like that too. You're like, okay, he puts himself in the elimination chamber. He doesn't qualify like the rest of the guys, but everyone goes, okay, you're the GOAT. You earned that, I guess, right? But then they're planting seeds of like the entitlement kind of thing, right? And you don't think of it at the time. This is what's fun about wrestling, is the soap opera storytelling. So then you get to the event and, you know, I'll go through the other matches, but we'll focus on this. And Cena ends up winning the Elimination Chamber by choking out CM Punk, essentially, after Seth Rollins interferes. John Cena had no problem pouncing right on CM Punk after Seth Rollins curb stomps him, to the point of being like, good guy, John Cena might have been like, whoa, that's not fair, right? But then he chokes him out, and which is great storytelling because CM Punk doesn't have to tap out. He doesn't have to give up. He just, you know, passes out. And then John Cena wins. And even during the show, we're getting, you know, I'm one of those guys who even reads a lot of, you know, dirt sheets online, rumors, things like that. Like, that's how nerdy I get with this stuff. And you go, oh, the Cody Rhodes Rock segment. So another storyline, if people don't watch wrestling, The Rock has come back and he's playing this final boss character. He was a villain. He was on Roman Reigns' side. He was trying to get Cody not to win the championship from Roman Reigns last year. And that's why the aforementioned Netflix event, the premiere of Raw, where he played a good guy again. You're like, what are you doing? It just doesn't fit the character. Like, and then he's like friends with Cody Rhodes now. And I'm like, you were just whipping him with a belt 3 months ago
in front of his own mother.
Yeah. Saying, Mama Rhodes, I'm going to beat your boy. And you're like, now your buddy's drinking Terramina tequila in the back. And it made no sense, but you know, it's worked out. So you have this thing where The Rock came out on SmackDown randomly couple weeks ago and he goes, Cody, I can give you everything. I can make you an even bigger star. You can be like the Hollywood star that I am. I'll give you
the nightmare will live forever.
And like, and you know, his dad being the American dream, saying the dream will live forever and not have to die like his dad did. And it's like really absurd stuff. And he goes, Cody Rhodes, I want your soul, Cody Rhodes. And he's just like, and it's like at the time you're like, where is this going? The Rock, a lot of the time, seems like he tries to make it about himself or he tries to insert himself in things, but you're like, where is this going? Like, it's absurdly entertaining at times, but it also is like, all right, does The Rock need to insert himself everywhere and stuff like that? Is he taking it away from the people who are there all the time? So there's going to be a segment at Elimination Chamber where The Rock comes out and Cody Rhodes gives him his answer of if he's going to sell his soul. And the rumors was it was going to take place like after the Kevin Owens, or before the Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn street fight thing that we saw, the unsanctioned match that Eric made a joke about earlier, where Eric is very prominently featured on the Netflix broadcast, which we'll get to in a little bit. But then you start to go, when is this segment going to happen? And then I start to hear from people who are going to the press conference that they're like, it looks like it's going to happen at the end of the show. And I'm like, how are you going to end the show on that? Like, it feels like such a massive thing that even if Cody says yes or no, like, it didn't feel like a big enough thing to end the show on. It just felt like underwhelming. boy, was I wrong. So John Cena beats CM Punk immediately. That means John Cena is facing Cody Rhodes for the championship at WrestleMania. And then Cody Rhodes comes out, and you assume they're just going to do a face-off kind of thing. And then The Rock comes out with Travis Scott. Random. Okay. Travis Scott comes out with The Rock. And then The Rock basically wants Cody's answer if he's going to sell his soul and become his corporate champion. A corporate champion, a tried and true wrestling storyline, right? The Rock was once a corporate champion to Vince McMahon and the corporation back in the day. Seth Rollins was once a corporate champion to Triple H and
Corporate Kane.
And yeah, we've had Corporate Kane. There's like the corporation, like the, it's a tried and true storyline, right? So The Rock, with the meta storytelling of him being a legitimate board member of TKO, which owns the WWE now, Vince McMahon's no longer involved. So The Rock almost being this Vince McMahon like figure of the figurehead of the, I'm the boss, the final boss.
Even though Triple H is still there.
Triple H is the guy who runs the creative, right? But he kind of removes himself from a lot of the stories now, where The Rock has kind of taken that figurehead, like I'm the owner of WWE basically kind of role. So Cody has to give The Rock the answer and of this tried and true, will you become my corporate champion kind of thing? Will you sell out? Will you get everything you dreamed of and more because you can now be the corporate champion? And one thing with the Netflix era that we also thought would happen was that they would go a little darker and go, there was what they called the PG era, where the John Cena era, where they toned down a lot of the violence. They toned down a lot of the swearing
for the kids.
Some of the messed up storylines that they did in the Attitude Era and stuff, like ask your brothers. Yeah, I'm sure your brothers told you some of the weird storylines and angles that they've done over the years that were very dark. And you go, well, they're going to be on Netflix now. They're not going to be on broadcast TV. Will they swear more? Will there'll be more blood and stuff like that? And they played it really well in the sense of like Triple H has even talked about this in interviews of being like, I don't want it just to be like, well, we're on Netflix now. It's R-rated, blood every week. You can swear whenever you want kind of things. Like he's like, I want it to be impactful. And I was thinking about that during this moment because you have Cody Rhodes giving The Rock the answer, and you don't get many F-bombs in WWE anymore, but you have Cody Rhodes telling The Rock to go fuck himself. And then it gets a huge ovation from the crowd. And then you get John Cena being like in the background being like, yeah, Cody, you told him to go fuck yourself or fuck himself. And then he kind of hugs John Cena, and then you get this fucking goofy. I love it. This zoom in on John Cena's face, and he turns from like happy, I'm good guy John Cena, just this evil look on his face. And then The Rock gives him a look and like a throat slash, and then throws up a two, which people are looking into that. What's the two mean, Eric? Because he did this. The Rock came out during Bad Blood and threw up three, which is John Cena's thing. And everyone's like, oh my God, he was teasing John Cena, joining his kind of corporate crew. And so John Cena then kicks Cody Rhodes in the nuts. And you have the first John Cena heel turn in like over 20 years. And, you know, looking back on it, it was so overwhelming at the time. It was the end of a very long night, but it was like, you said historic, and it sounds corny, but if you're a wrestling fan, it was one of the biggest moments in WWE history where you had it's like people talk about Hogan again, real, not a great guy in real life, but his character was the ultimate good guy. And when he joined the NWO in the late 90s, and turned bad guy, it's comparable to that, right? Like the guy who has been the all-American hero, good guy forever, and then finally turns heel. So then he beats the absolute shit out of Cody Rhodes, chokes him with his tie, beats him with a Rolex. Like Travis Scott smacks the shit out of Cody Rhodes, where you're like, bro, it's fake, just pretend to. Where like stuff like this, where they did a really good job of just John Cena being an evil piece of shit, and it was just so surprising and not the angle that I think anyone thought they would do. And it's such an interesting choice, having him in his retirement tour, you know, finally do this, right? Like he could have just played the greatest hits. We just did review of Mickey 17. And I know we talk about greatest hits for people where they could come and just kind of pull things from their career and kind of go, these are what I like and what I did, and kind of just go out on that. He could win the 17th championship as a good guy and just go off into the sunset. But what's more interesting is finally doing this thing that he never did and never went for. And I think it was such a shocking and interesting way of ending the show. And I cannot wait to see what they do with it, because, you know, having Cena be a bad guy and do the Darth Vader thing too, of being like, will he be redeemed? Of course he will be, right? Like, by the end of the year, he'll be good guy John Cena before he retires. Don't worry. But what that story is going to be between now, WrestleMania, and December, when he ultimately says he's going to retire, I'm sure Cody Rhodes will be that guy to bring him back to the light, right? And I think that's what makes wrestling so great, and for big surprises and having that shared experience of like why you want to be in that building is for moments like that, right? And to be there 10 rows from ringside and being able to witness that with my best friends, with you who knows The Rock and John Cena from movies, so it's funny and absurd to you to watch this aspect of them where they originated from, right? And then you have Kyle and Ryan, who I have a group thread called the NWO, where we all just talk about wrestling all the time. And I watch every PLE with those guys, right? Like your brother and Ryan come over almost every month, or I go to Kyle's house and we watch PLEs. And because of this Netflix era, we've been talking about it way more because we all have access to it. And that's the thing, right? Like everyone has Netflix and everyone can just throw on wrestling now. And when you see people talking about it on Twitter, it's just people can run on and jump on Netflix and do it. So to be there for this, I was saying to your brother at Mickey 17 yesterday, of being like, I was in the building for maybe the two biggest moments in The Rock's career, when he fought Hulk Hogan at the Rogers Center, formerly Sky Dome, at WrestleMania X8, and then when John Cena turned heel and joined him at this moment. So that's like cool as a longtime wrestling fan to say that you were there for both of those moments. So I'll forever be grateful to that. And it was such a shocking thing. And then the match before that was fun. I thought the Elimination Chamber, like, it's a fun gimmick, right? Like of everyone in their little pods yelling at each other and like slamming into each other. And it was such a
countdown clock as well.
Yeah. Like it was such a stacked card minus Damian Priest. Like it's like, no offense to Damian Priest, I don't think he belonged in that group of people. I'm not a huge Damian Priest fan. Nothing against the guy. I'm sure he's a nice guy and stuff, but the character and his build and stuff like that. But you had Logan Paul, CM Punk, Seth Rollins, John Cena, Drew McIntyre. Like it was a absolutely stacked main event.
And Logan Paul's also awful, but he works as a heel because he's so loathsome.
Yes. And unfortunately, he's very good at this too, yeah. Right? Like I don't like him as a person, right? And I would prefer if he wasn't in WWE, right? But like he's very good at playing that character. He leans into knowing people don't like him and then doubles down on that. And then he's an athletic guy who is unfortunately a good wrestler. So it's like, it's kind of a double-edged sword with him, but he can put on good matches and he's an entertaining personality, but then you try to remove the art from the artist kind of thing, if you call this art. And in wrestling, you know, unfortunately, yeah, a lot of the people involved haven't been great over the years, but
that's, I think in most, you know, fields, most there are things, a lot of yeah. people, but again, going to the Vince McMahon of it all, like,
yeah,
do you think a storyline of Cena turning heel, if Vince McMahon was still around, would be possible? Because there are things that wouldn't be possible if he was still in charge. Even just CM Punk being
WWE. Be around. And he's been so amazing since he came back. Right. And, you know, I think for the longest time, I'd always tell your brother this. I was like, wrestling needs that guy to go, right? Like for it to evolve, it needs, and again, Triple H learned from that guy. He's his son-in-law, right? Like there's still a lot of Vince McMahon in the WWE. And I don't mean the actual man who is not a good person. But a lot of his way of storytelling and things like is instilled. Obviously, Triple H is a very different guy and he has his own things that he enjoys. And Triple H really likes long form storytelling, like really taking his time with certain stories and planting the seeds and having them play out over years. And
you
stuff
saw
like
that in Blade 3.
Yes, exactly. And I really, he has his pros and his cons as well. But I think Triple H, it has evolved since he's taken over, and you can see the difference. And even with bringing people like CM Punk back, or a lot of guys that never worked in the Vince McMahon era, and Cena turning heel, to your question, you know, it obviously never did happen when Vince was around, because he was too much of a moneymaker, right? He was the guy, and like, he didn't see the appeal in not making him that guy. And you mentioned the Roman Reigns stuff earlier of Vince always had his guys, or he was so stubborn when it came to, I think Triple H listens to the audience, crowd reactions, and is maybe chronically online. I don't know, but like, is maybe reading a lot of what people are saying and doing and tries to react to that stuff, where Vince, I think, gave no shit about what anyone thought, but
he's with himself. Your NWO threat.
Yeah. Like, he's just like, he's like, no, I will make Roman Reigns a thing. And the big dog era of Roman Reigns of trying to be a face, people turned against him, right? And then to your point, when they finally were like, we need to lean into him being a bad guy, people started to go, he's great at this. And then he earned being a baby face now, right? Like, Roman Reigns,
he earned that wet hair look.
Yeah, he did, man. And then so like, that's the stuff that has worked out in WWE's favor over the last couple years and into this era of like, they're listening, I think, to, and you don't always want to listen to what fans think, because not, they don't always know what's best either, right? Like, sometimes I don't know if anyone would have called this John Cena turning heel thing. I'm sure some people did, but and some people might not think it's a great idea, right? Like, he was granting make-a-wish things before that show. And then later that night, he took a Rolex and beat the shit out of Cody Rhodes and made him bleed, right? Like, some people
would
not. Well,
it's back to make-a-wish.
Yeah, and they said they trademarked the term break-a-wish, which I think is hilarious. I'm like, oh my God.
And but it's like, also funny because it's like, he can still do that because he's John.
It's a character, right? Yeah. I think John Cena's always said if he's doing this, he's committing, right? But there's got to be a reason for it. And John Cena, this retirement tour, and he's been given shit for burying guys in the past where he put himself over instead of putting the future over, right? And I think this is him wanting to make Cody Rhodes the next John Cena, right? Or Roman Reigns or someone like that, right? Roman Reigns is even at the, you know, Roman Reigns is getting not to the end of his career, but like, he's been around for a long time too. And Cody Rhodes has too. But I think him being the ultimate villain is to make someone the ultimate face, right? So Cody Rhodes can be that guy doing the Make-A-Wish things, right? And then once John comes over to the light side at the end of this year, he can continue doing that stuff, right?
Yeah.
But in the meantime, Cody Rhodes is the ultimate hero. And I don't even like, again, I don't even love the Cody Rhodes character. I hate the neck tattoo. Like, I think he's, you know, wrestling acting is wrestling acting. But then you watch CM Punk's promo on Raw last night, which is the night after the, or 2 nights after the Elimination Chamber. And he is so good and natural, and you believe every word he's saying. And that when wrestling is the best is when it teeters that line of what's real and what's not, right? Of what people actually think about each other and what storyline and things like that. And CM Punk is so good at it, where Cody Rhodes is the more put together. Like, you can clearly tell he's playing a character, right? And he's acting. And sometimes that rubs me the wrong way. I like the guys that feel more natural. Like, I always love Stone Cold Steve Austin. I like Kevin Owens. I like kind of the guys that are off the cuff and grittier and not as much as the superhero kind of like have to put on a character kind of thing.
Or almost like politicians, right? Like, they play as like,
yes,
talking about like the corporate aspect of it, where other people are kind of like, you know, it's still performance art. It's still theater, but there's a naturalism to the charisma of the performers. Like, I get that with CM Punk, who also really looks a lot like John Hamm. I thought he looked
Nevis like has said that too, or Nevis said like John Hamm could play him in a biopic.
Yeah, but there's something about like, even like with like The Rock, like when The Rock, from some of like the earlier clips, you know, like the eyebrow raising days, like there was that personality, and like you could see why like a studio exec or a movie agent or someone could see potential in them, or Dave Bautista, like the
charisma. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Like there's a natural quality that comes out of it where, yeah, like the Cody Rhodes aspect of it, it does feel like, oh, he's very self-aware of like him having to put on a performance, and it doesn't maybe come naturally to him, where with some of these, you know, performers, it does, some of these athletes, it does. And then others, it's like, oh, I have to play the part.
Mm-hmm. You know? And I think that, I mean, John Cena, that's why I was always a Stone Cold guy over The Rock. Right. And I was always like, I was a Randy Orton guy over John Cena or something like that. Right. Like those types of characters, and I was always a, you know, The Rock even talked about Toronto being a heel town where they cheer for heels. So that's why they were kind of worried about how that segment would play out. Like, would people be like on John Cena's side, or would they, you know, side with Cody Rhodes? And it ended up working out for them. But those types of characters have always felt too put on for me. Even John Cena's whole shtick always felt too put on for me. Like, it didn't feel real, even though like I knew they are good guys, and it is partly their character, but I like characters that lean more into the realism aspect of who the person is, and so that's why I like CM Punk a lot now too. And so yeah, that was just such a wild moment at the end of the night. I think one of the biggest heel turns in wrestling history, one of the biggest storylines in wrestling history, and to be there with you guys was so amazing. Sitting on this silly chair that I, you know, we got offers for people to buy them after the event and stuff. Like that.
Someone
and
tried to take my
take
chair.
Yours, and then you had to grab it back from them, or your brother did. And you know, we had offers for, you know, hundreds of dollars to buy these chairs, and I was like, you know, part of you goes, well, yeah, I should just take the money, but then part of me goes, man, like this has my whole preamble to this. It's like it means a lot to me. Where I'm like, that chair is the night John Cena turned heel, and I was there and sat on that chair. And it's weirdly something that is like, I don't want to get rid of unless someone gives you a ridiculous offer. Right. And the whole night, like, you know, some of the hospitality stuff of them bringing us like the most absurd food I've ever had at a wrestling event, especially sitting 10 rows from ringside, of like, they brought us all these like Uber Eats bags of like food, and it had a menu in it, and I'm so grateful, but it was also very silly. But it almost matched wrestling, because wrestling is so silly and over the top. So like, I don't even know if that's what they were going for, but then that's how like I interpreted it. And I made jokes to like the people sitting behind me, because people would ask us like, how are you guys getting this food or these drinks? And I'm like, oh, so I felt like, you know, you feel like an ass when you're like, oh, we got free seats and free food and stuff like that. But I'm looking at the thing and I'm like, no one should have a seasonal fruit cup 10 rows from ringside during a wrestling event. And I'm just poking fun. I ate all of that food. I brought it home, and it was great, especially during a long event. I needed food in my stomach, and it was like this, it was absurd. It was just like one of the most lavish kind of events that I've ever been to. But then that's what I mean of like them really caring and want to make this a big deal, right? Like, they invited a lot of Canadian press. There was a lot of international press that I recognized from online, from wrestling backgrounds. And they also wanted to expose people like yourself and other film journalists and stuff that had an interest in wrestling to like come and, you know, I hate using the word content, but like, it's part of their content package on their service. It's entertainment, right? It is storytelling. It is all the things we love about movies. Yes, is it more soap opera and big and grand and silly? Yes, but some of my favorite things are grand and silly and over the top. And you know, we can go in reverse order. And you know, having friends messaging us because we were right there during the Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens fight. I mean, Eric, you were right beside them and didn't know what to do.
I could smell them. I honestly didn't know how to react to it other than just to laugh, because it was just like so surreal to see these two guys like literally, you know, go from the stage, go from, you know, the actual ring, and, you know, make their way into the audience. Like, obviously that's been done before, and you know, like, it's always I think, thrilling for the fans to see like that close up, especially if you're sitting in that area. But I was just like, the whole time, it's like, okay, we're doing this. It's happening.
Eric's sitting on the aisle. Your brother was beside you, then Ryan, and then I'm the closest into the middle. And yeah, if you guys go back and have any interest, even if you don't care about wrestling but want to see Eric and I's stupid face, you can watch that Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens unsanctioned match, which is also a very silly term. Unsanctioned, but there's a referee and it's an official thing that's happening. But we can't sanction it. Like, if anything happens, we're not liable. And then, yeah, watching them come into the crowd and having friends like our friend Alex Reno and Nick Gallegos sending us messages on Twitter, seeing like photos of us in the crowd. I have my phone up and you're just kind of standing there with your arms crossed, just laughing at them as they're coming by. Like, I've watched it a few times. We can hear your brother in the background go, "He's your best friend," like stuff like that. It's just like, that's the crowd interaction stuff that is a once in, and just being in that part, being a once in a lifetime thing. Like, I don't know if I'll ever sit in those seats again, right? So you had to use every moment. And I think the energy in the crowd around us, you know, some people maybe a little bit too much, some
maybe indulge a little bit in the alcoholic beverage. Yeah,
maybe I did too, right? But like, sometimes
there's a level of which it, like,
being,
you know,
funny and respectful.
Yeah.
Versus, yeah. Yeah. And I get that. And you're going to get that in a mix of crowd. And again, wrestling being this one thing where it brings, you know, in such a divided world, I feel like it's weirdly, I don't want to say it's a safe space, because I'm sure it's not, but like, there's one place where like conservatives and liberals and like all these people come together and watch one stupid thing together. And I feel like there are a lot of people on both sides that, like, some people you wouldn't normally want to interact with or talk to in real life, but you're all just there to watch this one stupid thing. And not to bring politics in it, but I just always felt like there are very left-leaning people who love wrestling and very right-leaning. Like, wrestling can be a very conservative, right-leaning kind of thing. Donald Trump was a big part of WWE at one point. Obviously, Vince McMahon, Linda McMahon is an active, education head, and
was just being
like
hired to dismantle it.
So like, there's some, you know, it's still a big part of it, but weirdly, you know, myself, your brother Ryan, all very left-leaning people.
Yeah.
And so it's weird that there's this thing that people come together and just like put that aside for a little while.
Well, it was noticeable though, I think, with the national anthem.
Yes. And that's a big part to talk about too, where politics did get brought into it. We've seen a lot in sports lately. You know, the Four Nations Hockey Championship was a big one because Canada and US played each other a couple times, where, you know, we're recording this as Donald Trump, put his tariffs into effect. Thank you. And you know, there is a trade war happening between the Canada and the US and Mexico right now. And, you know, Canadian citizens are being very vocal, of booing the American national anthem and people being clear of being like, hey, this is your president is threatening to annex us and he's imposing a trade war on us. It's not necessarily for every American citizen and we're not trying to disrespect you
all.
It's
the policy.
We have to make our voice heard somehow. And I know it's not really going to change that guy's mind, but you can't, like, you have to kind of understand where we're all coming from with that stuff. And it started off with us booing the national anthem. I know Pat McAfee got upset at it, one of the commentators, and mentioned it throughout the broadcast and then brought it up on his show the next day and kind of walked back on it a little bit and understood where some people were coming from. But yeah, that was an interesting way to start the show. So what I mean by, you know, again, mostly the people there are Canadian. Obviously people travel in from all over to go to these events, but yeah, that was definitely a hot topic to start the show for sure. But the Sami Zayn Kevin Owens thing was hilarious. Seeing them come by was so much fun, and a really good, like, hardcore match with barbed wire chairs and tables and trash cans and smashing through beer tables in the crowd and power bombs under the side of the ring and like all this kind of stuff. And then you finally have Kevin Owens beating Sami Zayn after powerbombing him on the side. And there were a lot of fun Easter eggs for people who they've been best friends. They're both Canadian. They've been best friends since they were young. They've come up through the ranks together and stuff like that. So I think that was a pretty big moment for them to be facing each other at the Rogers Center in front of all these people in Canada, even though they're both kind of from Quebec. So they probably hate Toronto, but I think still a big deal for them. And then you have Randy Orton, who returned after that, which is a lot of fun having him come out, RKO everyone, try to punt Kevin Owens in the head, which is something Randy Orton used to do, which is like an illegal move. So that whole storyline is them doing these illegal moves to hurt each other and stuff like that.
It's non-sanctioned.
And it wasn't sanctioned, so it was allowed, you know? So that was a blast. That match, I remember everyone just being on their feet the entire time, especially in a long show, just like that, and then leading right into the chamber after was a lot, but a lot of fun. It kicked off with the women's chamber match, which was a little bit more standard, but I like how they started it. They had Jade Cargill come back, and there was a whole, you know, soap opera storyline of who attacked her backstage and put her out on injury for a while. And then you thought she was going to attack Liv Morgan, but then she attacks Naomi, who was tag team partners with her former tag team partner, and all this kind of stuff. Very soap opera kind of stuff, which I love. But so starting the show with a return, then doing a Randy Orton return, and then ending with a John Cena heel turn was just like, it was one of the biggest PLEs in a long time when it comes to just so it all kind of made sense of going like, why are they doing this at the Rogers Center? Because like usually an Elimination Chamber would be at a Scotiabank Arena, right? And like they haven't done a show in Toronto at that venue since WrestleMania in 2002, right? Like usually they don't do big stadium shows unless it's Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, basically those two, or if it's an international show where they go to Australia or France or somewhere that never gets one. So now you're starting to see them go, oh, I understand why they put it at this giant venue. They had this plan all along. So you had Bianca Belair win the women's chamber match, which then led to Io Sky winning the women's championship on Raw last night. So it's not Rhea Ripley. So they're doing a fun thing there where Rhea Ripley, Eric, you've probably seen her, super tatted up. Like people call her mommy. Oh,
she was with CM Punk to intro the.
Yes, that was Rhea Ripley, like super muscular, but tatted up, and people call her mommy and stuff like that. So she's been very dominant in the women's division for a couple years now, but like the one person who has her number is Io Sky, where she's never beaten her one-on-one. And I think like I nerd out about the storytelling in the sense of like, that's a really fun way for someone who's beaten everyone, but they have this one person that has their number, right? And then, so that's a fun storyline where she loses the championship on Raw the next day. So now it should be Io Sky versus Bianca at WrestleMania. And then the one thing, then we had the Trish Stratus and Tiffany Stratton versus Nia Jax and Candice LeRae tag team match, which felt like the, I love Trish Stratus, love Tiffany Stratton, but felt like the one thing that probably didn't need to be on the card.
Felt tacked on.
Yeah. Like Trish Stratus, you know, one of the biggest women superstars of all time.
And Canadian, right?
Like Canadian from Toronto, yeah. Right? So I definitely understand that, you know, she deserves that, like to wrestle at the Rogers Center in front of all those people. It just felt like random a little bit, where you could have had a women's title match. You didn't have Gunther on the show, who was the world heavyweight champion. You didn't have any champions defended on the show, which again, they earned that with all the kind of twists and turns that they had. But on paper, when you're looking at it, you go, wow, there's no championships being defended the whole night and stuff like that. So
it's too cold. They didn't want to come to Toronto.
Yeah. I would have maybe swapped that out and done the Trish Stratus stuff on SmackDown the night before, which they did. They had her come out and stuff like that. But, I'm not going to, Trish Stratus deserves that. So I'm not really going to be that upset. And it didn't take up much time. Like, do you even remember that match that much? Like, not really.
I just remember her because I know who she is. Yeah. But other than that, like, it didn't like affect me in any way where it's like, oh, this is too much. Like, if it was a movie, I would probably say, like, oh, that could have been cut. But I was fine with it. Like, it didn't bother me.
It wasn't a bad match or anything like that. It was just kind of like, oh, they're doing this because she maybe gets one more match in Toronto, right? Like, this was her swan song, which I'm kind of okay with.
The home team advantage, you know?
Exactly. So yeah, really, it was only those four matches and that segment, but it was a 3.5 hour show. It was
longer than the Brutalist.
It was a long show, and but it went by so quickly, and I remember just being completely engaged with the entire thing and just having a good time with you guys. And sitting where we're sitting, just for anyone who's ever interested in, like, this was the first time I'd sat almost ringside. I did sit in the third row during a house show in Oshawa at the Civic Auditorium way back. I remember yelling at Scott Steiner and him yelling back at me and stuff because I was that close. But this was the first time at a major event. So we were seated in the 10th row. The one thing about sitting on the floor is everyone's level, right? Like, it's not stadium seating where strategically everyone's a little bit higher than the person in front of them, so you can see. So I will say that it is a bit harder to see at times when you're sitting something.
You're
like
looking
that.
At the monitors at that case. Like, you're looking up at the monitor or at the side if you're wanting to, like, really catch certain things if you're missing it.
So I'd say, like, anyone thinking about it, if you're buying tickets, like, you'd have to be in, like, the front five rows, I think, for it to really, like, I don't want to sound ungrateful because they were amazing seats, because the energy there, everyone's so into it because everyone either paid a lot of money or you're really close. And I think even for that Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn thing was worth it to be there. Right. Yeah. But you never know if something like that's going to happen. But like, if, the night before on Friday on SmackDown, Ryan and I bought last minute tickets for $95 and we were seated like seven rows in the 100 level, smaller arena, right? But perfect view. Where I think obviously if someone said, hey, I have floor seats again, 1,000% I'd be in. But if I'm buying seats for anyone interested, like, maybe the Rogers Center is different because even the 100 level is pretty far back. Like, when I had to go to the washroom, but like, you still have a good view if you're raised up a little bit. But I will say there were at times, especially it being an elimination chamber where there's a giant cage in front of you as well, like, it was hard to see at times. But then again, that's why sometimes with live sports, I think in general, you're there.
Now you see me?
Yeah. Yeah. You're there for the atmosphere, right? You want to be in the building. So no matter if you're in the 500 levels where everyone looks like a tiny ant, or you're 10 rows from the ring where you can see everything, but people's heads are blocking it, or the ring post, or the cameraman standing in the wrong area or something. But like, or at times you have an amazing view because it's in the perfect spot, right? But I think you want to be there. You're always going to get a better presentation, I think. Not, it's a different presentation, but watching it at home. I talk about this with hockey and other stuff with your brother all the time, being like, sometimes watching at home is the ultimate way to see it. You get the commentary, you get the best angles, you get
saving money, you know?
Yeah. But sometimes you want to be in the room where it happens, to quote Hamilton and Lin-Manuel Miranda, who is a wrestling fan, actually. I think you just want to be there. And that's what I love about going to these events live, and why I had such an amazing time this weekend, is because it's a shared experience with, it's why we like going to the movies, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's a communal experience.
Yeah. We could watch movies at home, right? But like, it's sometimes not the same. Sometimes I skip a press screening because I want to see it with an opening night audience, right?
You're the mad of the people.
So I think that's it, right? Like, yes, is the experience on Netflix amazing and great? Yeah, I'm sure everyone watching at home enjoyed Elimination Chamber a lot as well. But going to that live and it being in Toronto and being this huge moment, I think it was such a you know, it sounds corny. Triple H teased this weekend as an industry changing event. And everyone was like, what are you talking about? Like, there's Elimination Chamber is not going to be an industry changing event. But then when you pull something like this John Cena thing, and then having a really solid, fun wrestling card between that with fun twists and turns, and this road to WrestleMania is always the most fun, right? It brings in the most casual viewers. Like, the Royal Rumble is the most accessible wrestling event of the year. I love watching it with normies because you get 30 men, 30 women in one single match. So you get everyone coming out with a countdown and a number, and then their name pops up and they come out in a ridiculous costume and they wrestle. And it's such an easy concept of throw the person over the top rope that they're eliminated, right? And then the winner gets to go to WrestleMania to fight the champion. And then this road between Royal Rumble and WrestleMania, and then finalizing with the Super Bowl of wrestling at WrestleMania being in Las Vegas this year, these couple months are the most fun, right? And then the hardcore people stick around for, you know, the road to SummerSlam and the road to Survivor Series. And maybe, you know, the people just come in once a year for the WrestleMania stuff. But this Netflix thing, I think, opens it up to so much more. And I think it'll be really interesting when the rest of the WWE deal is up with Peacock and NBC. And will everything go to Netflix? Will it stay? Will they want to be in multiple places? Because I think that could be smart too, right? So just from a business standpoint, I think about that stuff as well. But
well, it seems like they're dominating live events in general, because they also stream the SAG Awards, and there's even conversations about maybe them, you know, potentially being a bidder for the Oscars at one point or another.
Yeah, they did their first NFL game last on Christmas Day, where they did a big halftime show like with Beyonce. That was like basically the Super Bowl halftime show, but it was just a regular season NFL game, right? So yeah, they seem to be really leaning into live events, which is, I think, a natural progression, I guess, right? Because for a while we were like, oh, okay, they've kind of, you know, they make their original content, and they Netflix, if they have a brand, it's to be as broad as possible. And that's non-derogatory for the most part. Is just like, sometimes, yes, you maybe lack an identity of who are you for, but I think they're trying to be for everyone. Yeah, I
it makes up for Emilia Perez, I'll say that.
Eric, any final thoughts on your first wrestling event?
I think I'm gonna quit while I'm ahead. Yeah. You know, I was on top. I don't think I'll ever be able to match that experience at all, really.
Yeah, it's would you go to another one though? If
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't want to pay for it.
Sure, yeah.
Full transparency. I think like it was just like a perfect set of circumstances and like how it all worked out. But I enjoyed every minute of it. I think like mostly like I was there because I just wanted to hang out with you and Kyle and Ryan, because, you know, like as life changes, like, you know, you don't get to see each other.
And that's
all the time.
I'm trying to be better at doing things with friends, right? And like,
yeah, and this was like the perfect opportunity for that, and like just, you know, having fun and being a part of the environment, and like you were saying with like doing the opportunity thing, just trying something new, like just trying something.
If it's not you're maybe not going to watch Raw every Monday, no, maybe you'll come hang out with us and watch WrestleMania, but you're maybe not going to watch Raw every Monday, right? So
yeah, and that's how I felt, where it's just like, oh, you know, like be open to the experience. I mean, that's why also like I'm flying to the UK. You know, like there was a part of me when I was asked if I wanted to do it, where I was like, oh, well, I gotta be here for my weekly reviews and stuff like that. Well, it's like, no, you can take a week off. Like,
you absolutely go and should, and follow what you want to do, right?
Like, and that's, yeah, and that's where I'm like, I'm trying to be like, oh, be open to the new experiences or try new things, even if it's just once. Not that I haven't been before. Like I've always been very open when it comes to movies and like things that I watch. I'd see a little bit of everything, but in terms of like, just like general life, like in between, you know, the film stuff, like it's nice to do something like this that is a little bit like
different,
outside of the norm,
still in
you
the
know?
Wheelhouse of storytelling, even if it's, and that's why I've been thinking a lot lately too of, you know, again, to bring this full circle of those things I liked earlier in my life and that faded away a little bit, but then you bring back into your life, or you just embrace them when you stop giving a shit what other people think. And not like anyone would make fun of video games or, and there's many, all these things are very popular, don't get me wrong, but I've just been happier embracing the things that I enjoy without caring what other people think. And it's fun to then see it become, you know, when I was a comic book fan and then you started to see comic book movies become, you know, popular with everyone, it's a fun thing to experience with more people, right? And seeing that with wrestling right now and having people who were more casual or never watched it before. And I'm not saying it's going to get to the level of comic book movies, or it's not going to have its detractors either, but
But I think there's less people that look down upon it. Like, yeah, that's the thing where, like, it's become more accepted in the sense of, you know, entertainment, and it almost has, like, you know, less of a stigma around it, or like you can feel open to say that, hey, you know, I'm a wrestling fan and not feel embarrassed by it. And it's, you know, it's the same thing with comic book movies, as you were mentioning before. I think like it just takes time, and even with podcasting, like there was a time where like saying, oh, you're a podcaster, or like, all right, podcast, where it's like, it's either something people don't really even know what it is, or they think like, oh, it's not like a legitimate form of, you know, entertainment or
criticism,
you know, or criticism, or even like viable as a career. And, you know, money wise, financially speaking, it's not,
it does work usually, for some
unless
people.
You're a celebrity. Yeah, yeah. But I think like people are like, oh, that's like a legitimate, like,
or everyone had one and they kind of, you were a basic, yeah, you know, mid 30s white dude. Of course you have a podcast. But yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Once you stop, it's a perfect thing with wrestling. Once you just stop, just enjoy what you want to enjoy. And I really had a wonderful time this weekend. So it was, I hope everyone give, if you listen to an hour of this and don't watch wrestling, I'm sure you all who listen to this probably watch the event and stuff like that, but try to, my thing is during these events like WrestleMania and Royal Rumble, just invite a few people over who've never watched wrestling. And it's fun to like explain the stupid storylines to them. It's fun to kind of see their reaction to silly things. And then even something like John Cena turning heel, I think anyone can grasp that because he's a big Hollywood star now. He's been this good guy persona for so long. It's just a fun moment to share kind of with everyone. So yeah, I had an absolute blast. I cannot wait for them to come back. I was all in on when that event ended. I said we were going to Buffalo for Raw on Monday. And like, I was all in, dude. And like, I,
the hierarchy of the WWE, yeah,
I yelled that
forever.
I remember I yelled about James Gunn a few times like even though he had nothing to do with Black Adam, but like I was the whole Peacemaker thing, and yeah, it's just Peacemaker and Black Adam teaming up is very funny, and them playing these corporate Hollywood sellouts I think is, you know, good for them for embracing that. And
I mean, they kind of are that.
Yeah, that's what
life.
I mean.
Especially
yeah.
The Rock, right?
So it's just like, at least they can acknowledge that and play that into their characters, which I think is when wrestling is the best. So thank you all for listening and indulging me in one of my silly passions. I'm going to try to talk about wrestling a little bit more, whether that's bringing your brother and Ryan on to do something separate or just kind of including it here and there in some episodes.
We're finding
here.
A way, like when, like, you know, Dave Bautista has a movie coming out, or The Rock, like even with like the Smashing Machine this year,
yeah,
you know, stuff like that, where like you can kind of, you know, use that as a starting point, but then, you know, expand and go into, you know, a different arena,
yeah,
you know, with that.
And so, I think I definitely want to continue this after WrestleMania, whether I think that's when I'm going to try to bring your brother and Ryan on, maybe for a post WrestleMania episode. I wanted to get them on this episode, but I think timing wise, we just had to get a lot of recording done, so I couldn't make it work with them. But yeah, and go check out Ryan actually posted a really wonderful reel on Instagram. So he's at Ryan, I think it's Ryan Miles 9, I think, or was it under his Ryan Hancock 1? But I'll share it again on my socials. And he put together a fun little reel to show that our entire experience, which I thought was wonderful. So I want to, maybe I just ask him if I can post it on the Untitled YouTube as well.
Yeah, it is Ryan Miles 9.
Which it might be private or something, but maybe I'll ask him if I can post it on ours as like a YouTube short thing. YouTube, what do they call them? I think they're just YouTube shorts, right? But
yeah, they're just shorts.
Yeah, so maybe I'll ask him if I can do that because that could be fun. All right, everyone. Thank you for listening. We really do appreciate it. Please go check out our other stuff that we have up this week. We should have a Mickey 17 review later this week. Eric did some interviews for Seven Veils with Adam McGoyan and Amanda Seyfried that you can check out. And we also have a review of Daredevil Born Again, a review in progress for Daredevil Born Again that you guys can check out, as well as discussing the press conference and things about that. So it's been a fun week, exhausting week. We'll have a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
We'll have a little bit more coming up. We'll have a review for the Electric State next week, and that might be the last thing before Eric goes on a little bit of a vacation. So we might, maybe I'll bring in a special guest to do an episode while you're gone. I don't know. We'll see. Or maybe you'll want a podcast from the England.
I mean, maybe.
No, I'm kidding. Please do not do that. Do not do that. But while you're there, I do want you to see a cool movie theater and come back and talk about that.
Yeah, I've been looking into it to see like what's playing when, or you know, just to, you know, to get the vibe, because when my Nana was growing up, she worked at a movie theater.
Cool.
in Piccadilly
Square.
Is it Square? Yeah.
Cool. All right, cool. Go check out all of our work over on our Letterbox, which is Untitled_Movies. You can follow Eric and I on all social medias at Matt Rohrbeck and at EM6211 or at Eric Marchin. I don't know what else to plug. I think that's everything. Until next time.
I wish I wore a Scorpion King t-shirt. That would have been good.
You can't see me.